and welcome to this week's episode of the Smart Meat Podcast. My name is Daniel Hannan.
My name is Niall McCann.
And it's not that long since I've been in your kitchen, Niall. I was here last night. You, you and your buddies taught me how to play poker.
Yeah, no better, man.
Yeah.
Don't go joining any pro.
I'm not
striking the casino now.
No. I'm not ready to be one of those lads with the, you know, when they show camera on poker even on TV and they've got the glass on the tables and the cameras under there and you see the cards. I don't think I'm quite in that territory yet.
Victoria Karen.
Who's that? Oh, is that what's his face? His wife.
David Mitchell's wife. Yeah. Yeah, she's an excellent poker player.
Is she a pro?
I thought she was just a
TV presenter.
I think, wasn't she like a journalist, I think? Oh no, maybe she wasn't a journalist.
I think you probably know more better than I do.
Well, I've watched her more, I would imagine.
Yeah, panel shows and the like.
Yeah, I like her. She's really cool.
I think I could probably be sitting beside her and not necessarily recognize her, but I know who she is. You know?
No, I'd be like, oh my god, 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 I'm sitting beside Victoria Karen.
Would you do your David
would you
Mitchell?
Do her?
No, no. I said, would you do your David Mitchell impression in an attempt to trick her into thinking it was her husband?
Victoria, close your eyes.
That would be sleazy to an extraordinary degree.
You shouldn't do it.
No, I probably shouldn't do it.
Well, that's the first lesson you've learned today, Noel, is don't impersonate David Mitchell in front of Victoria.
Karen. Victoria Karen Mitchell, I believe she goes by now.
Victoria Karen Mitchell is so fucking English.
Isn't it? Yeah, it sounds very English, yeah.
Only if she was called Victoria Karen Mitchell Teabag or something like
Victoria Karen Mitchell Trumpington Esquire.
I
always had a wee soft spot for her, and then she got married to him, and half of me was like, oh, they would be a lovely couple, and the other half of me was, well, there's another ship sailed.
Another unlikely, nigh impossible ship.
Yeah, but you never know. You never know who you'd meet if you were wandering the streets of London, like.
Yeah, that's true. You'd come bump into her.
Victoria!
Hear those stories on, what on earth have I got on my trousers? I got muck or something on my trousers. I didn't realize that. Did you hear those stories on the Kermode and Mayo of people like meeting like, what's her face? But not even Donald Gleeson. What's the actress Margot Robbie, listening to the podcast and hearing Margot Robbie on their earbuds and looking over and Margot Robbie sitting across from them on the plane.
Yeah.
Did you see Suicide Squad?
I did, yeah.
Any good?
No, it's drivel. Right. It's absolute drivel.
Absolute shit, I'd imagine.
Absolute drivel. It's really insultingly bad because you can see the joins. Like, you can see where... Yeah, I'm just going to say it. I'm not spoiling it for anybody because, frankly... It's nothing to spoil. It's shite, right? Nothing I say could make it worse of an experience. But they build up the Joker and his relationship with Harley. And you can clearly see there's this moment in the film where there's like a moral conundrum before her because the Joker's coming to rescue her. And it's build up and build up and build up. And you can clearly see for some reason there is a moment... where she was going to have to make the choice, the moral choice, do I stick with the squad and try and get us through this, or do I go with the Joker? And then they just blew everything up. It was like, what? You just spent an extraordinary amount of this film building up to this. It's clearly the moment for it. And then you say, yeah, let's shoot down a helicopter.
It's the only person I heard actually say that give it like a decent review is Kevin Smith.
He does a lot of that.
But he doesn't give anything a bad review.
No.
And I'm like, also, he's not in a position to review anything badly because he's in the business. Like, you know,
exactly.
He's not,
he can't piss people off.
Yeah. He can't. Even though he's like working outside the box at the minute. Like,
yeah, outside the mainstream, just like our friend Jeff, who we'll be talking about in a little while.
Just like us.
Just like us.
We're so outside the mainstream that...
I don't think the stream even knows we're here.
No, we're like...
I like that, though.
Oh, yeah, no, like, I love doing this podcast, but I also love the fact that we don't have to spend a whole lot of time doing, like, web admin or some shit like that. Like,
and also, I can kind of say what I like.
Yeah, and if people want to find it, they will.
Yeah.
And if not, I mean...
Fuck nuts.
Is this just a secret club of, like, 21 weirdos?
You know, we're getting a few more downloads than that now.
21 Weirdos would be a great name for a band.
21 Weirdos, yeah.
Like 10,000 Maniacs.
Or the Crazy 88.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it would be. That would be amazing. You should set up a band and call them 21 Weirdos.
21 Weirdos, yeah. I think I'm on it already.
Nice one. Yeah. I like it. Get the t-shirts printed up.
So, Niall, this is the Spot Me podcast.
That's why we're here.
And every week we get together here. We're normally a little bit higher energy than this, but we...
I slept on the couch last night. I didn't realise until this morning, but that's what happened.
Did you wake up? You said you woke up around 10:30 when you fell asleep on the couch. Was that a thing where you went back to your upstairs big boy bed? Yeah. Or did you just get up?
No, I did a couple of hours. I went around to my nanny. Did a couple of hours of bed. In my proper bed. Went around to my nanny's.
Sunday dinner?
No, just cleaning the house.
Oh, very good.
And then came back here and made a half-hearted attempt at cleaning this.
Do you have any chicken left?
Oh, ridiculous amounts of chicken.
Just for context, Niall bought, what were they, goujons or whatever for the poker last night?
Various things, salt and chili chicken.
There's at least 5 chickens in there.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, I overshot somehow.
Oh my god, I couldn't believe it when I saw these huge trays of chicken coming
out. You haven't gone vegetarian, Daniel. Your will remained strong. I was very impressed.
It was difficult because I love that kind of chicken. So it was like, oh shit, like, should I just eat some? Should I just fucking eat some? Why not?
You could have
like,
had some. I mean, it wasn't, you weren't out supporting the industry. It was my fault.
No, that's true. And if anything, now it's more of a waste because some of it won't get eaten.
Unquestionably, it's not going to get eaten. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, is that me justifying that to myself so I can eat chicken?
Well, you didn't. You just fucking. You held strong.
But then, what did I hold strong to? Like, was it worth it?
I don't know. Only you can answer that one, Dan.
I think it was. It felt good.
Did you?
Yeah.
Like a little bit of the moral high ground.
So good that I bought a snack box on the way home. No, I didn't.
Did you? No. Congratulations.
But we swap pop cultural artifacts once a week. We meet up and talk about it again. Mm. Movies, books, films, that kind of thing.
The various accoutrements of the culture.
We get back here after a long... And actually, these... they're coming out sort of longer after we talk about them. Mm-hmm. So like this one came out on Friday and we recorded it on Sunday. So there's been some huge news story. If you're all on fire or whatever and you're thinking, why aren't they talking about the fact that now everybody's on fire? we didn't know. So
nearly happened in Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah. The mm-hmm. fake thing on the warning boards or whatever.
Yeah. People were running. Like, where are you running to?
Did you see that? I saw some statistics somewhere that the usage of Pornhub went way down, obviously, when people thought that there was going to be a disaster. And after it was proved that it wasn't going to be a disaster, there was like a massive spike in the use of Pornhub in Hawaii.
How strange. Not that it went down. I would have...
But after that roller coaster, it's just like, gotta have to center myself somehow.
It's just a wank.
Yeah, exactly.
But they wouldn't say that in Hawaii, would they?
No.
I'm going to jerk off.
They'd call it a... Yeah, they would. Yeah, it's an awful phrase, isn't it?
Jerk off? Yeah.
I busted many a nut in my day. None of them newsworthy.
He's a very funny
Will
man.
We start with Dave?
Yeah, let's start with Dave.
So you got me to watch... The two new Dave Chappelle specials,
yes,
Equanimity and the
Bird Revelation.
The Bird Revelation. I wonder why did he call it the Bird Revelation?
I don't know.
These names seem to have no real... And there was bits in each special that could have been in the other one, like in...
Yeah, Equanimity, though. You can see him taking things with Equanimity in
what
the
special. What does
Equanimity
actually mean?
Just means equanimity. It means solid... Not solid, but like if you are behaving with equanimity, your reaction is measured and very, it's measured.
It's measured, I see. A measured reaction, so that's equanimity.
Yeah, you kept yourself on an equal keel.
Oh, right, an even keel.
Yeah, so that didn't work, yeah.
Well, I get you though. So, so we did 2 Netflix specials last year as well, which were good. Not as good as these ones, but they were good.
No, I liked them though, yeah.
I think over those 2 specials, there was 1 special's worth of good stuff in the previous one. You know,
maybe.
I think these 2 are different enough to warrant.
They're very different. I was wondering. Yeah. I kind of wanted to get your take on that because one of them is a very polished sort of end of a fucking tour piece of work, and the other one is just him in a pretty small venue.
It seems to be just sort of because he's talking about stuff that happened the day before, and like he was talking about
Charlie Rose.
Yeah, he was, and he's talking to the crowd quite a bit in that one as well, if I recall. Yeah,
he is.
And it did seem to be like only Dave Chappelle would do that for a Netflix special, to just like rap with people.
Yeah,
just to be like, let's just sit down and have a. I'll talk to this.
He's incredibly good at it.
He's amazingly talented. I think he's doing stand up since he was like 14 or something, like I've really heard him young. Crazy young.
Yeah, I heard him tell the story. This is him. Here's a clip. This is him talking about his background and growing up. Just to give you some context for the man, have a wee listen.
When I was growing up, I was probably about 8 years old, and at the time, we were living in Silver Spring. Yes. Common misconception about me in D.C. A lot of people think I'm from the hood. That's not true. But I never bothered to correct anybody because I wanted the streets to embrace me. As a matter of fact, I kept it up as a ruse. Like, sometimes I'll hang out with rappers like Nas and them, and these motherfuckers will start talking about the projects. Yo, it was wild in the PJs, yo. And I'll be like, word, nigga, word. But I don't know. I have no idea. My parents did just well enough so that I could grow up poor around white people. And to be honest, when Nas and them talk about the projects, nigga, I used to get jealous because it sounded fun. Everybody in the projects was poor, and that's fair. But if you were poor in Silver Spring, nigga, it felt like it was only happening to you. Nas does not know the pain of that first sleepover at a white friend's house.
So he's been kind of out of the game for a while, and he spends quite a lot of the second special talking about how he's not doing anymore. He's given up comedy, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because he was gone for like after the Chappelle show, he was gone for fucking ages. He didn't really do anything, like, you know.
He seems a bit put out about that as well.
Yeah, because he was on Inside the Actor's Studio.
Oh, was he?
They did an episode with him, and it was around the time that he left that show, and I think he talked about what he did. I think he went to Africa, I think, like, you know.
Yeah, he talked about that.
Does he talk about that thing? Yeah. Like,
I went to South Africa.
I don't know what the I'm not 100% clear on what actually happened with all that.
Well, he walked away, like, didn't it? It wasn't like the show wasn't fucking big or successful.
No, I think if anything, the size of that show was kind of lost on me a little bit when I was reading stuff about him, like it, because it didn't really make its way over here, did it?
No, I don't think.
I don't think it was even on Sky or anything. Like,
the
first
time I ever came across Dave Chappelle or heard about him at all was Shane. I was saying it to Shane last night. Shane Riley recommended him to me, and it was around that time. It was the Chappelle show, like.
Oh, so the stuff is that YouTube time? Is that the kind of the same time frame? Would people have had the internet when the Chappelle show was big?
It might have been just at the very, very start of it.
Okay.
We think of it, YouTube's only there since like 2003. Can you believe that?
Seems like, can you imagine life without fucking YouTube?
No, it's weird.
Because like, if I'm thinking in my head, oh, I wonder how to make like sesame noodles, I'll find out, like, you know, I'll go on YouTube and it'll be some guy, some amazing chef that just happens to make YouTube videos. And I'll be like, all right, that's what I need to do. Like, you know,
yeah.
I use YouTube for fucking, if I'm learning a song and I'm having trouble with it, some wankers put up a tab on YouTube, like, you know, I'll go look at that. Even if it's not good, you get the idea. You're like, all right, now I got it from here. Like, you know, and so it's like, YouTube's got, like, apart from just watching comedy clips or whatever, it's got a million uses, like, you know.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. But,
YouTube had to work my central, the storage heater.
Oh, really?
Did you ever have one of those storage heaters in any place that you lived? And the dial on it says, like, 4, 7, 12, and it's got two dials and there's like a picture of a raindrop on one of them, and you're like, how the fuck does this thing even work? Like, you know,
yeah,
I had to go on YouTube and some dude did a tutorial just explaining to you how a storage heater works.
Fair play. I had one place, I used to live in a place with storage heaters, yeah.
I could never, like, off my, like in Galway, like years and years when I didn't have YouTube, I had no idea how a storage heater worked. I could never figure it out. Really? I just sort of switch it on and hope it was fucking doing its thing. Doing like, something. You know, and like, I think it meant a lot of the time our fucking house was sweltering when everybody was in bed and cold during the day. Like, you know, I could not fucking get my head around it.
That's literally the opposite of a storage heater, or what a storage heater is supposed to do. What,
yeah, I know. Yeah. I don't, but see, I didn't understand the dial on it. It seemed to have pretty random numbers on it. And then the other side seemed to be like little one drawing of like a raindrop and another drawing of like a fork or something. And I was like, I don't know how this works.
A raindrop and a fork. Okay, well, you're happy, I'm happy. I suspect that's not what it was.
Well, it seemed, like, in my memory, that's what it seems like. Maybe it was just, like, I was still green around the gills. No, that means sick, doesn't it?
Green around the gills means sick,
yeah. Still green around the ears. Yeah. And my point is, though, I went straight on YouTube when I had it, to figure out how these fucking storage heaters work.
But what is your point, Danny? Was that a good thing that he didn't have YouTube? Or was it a bad thing that Dave Chappelle didn't have YouTube? Or was it... What?
Just YouTube. That was the point.
Oh, okay. Fair play.
But I think that's how those kind of... Like in the 90s. Like, that's why, like, people of our... Like, Mr. Show should be, like, our Monty Python for our generation. But we didn't see it. Like, I saw it years later. Like, you know, yeah, but...
I still haven't seen it.
Like, Key and Peele was the last kind of big sketch comedy thing to happen, and like, I don't know the stuff very well myself, but that's how people got to know it on this side of the pond, was like things on YouTube. Like, you know.
Yeah. Well, of course, satellite TV gets a lot of that shit, doesn't it?
Yeah, but not everybody had it either, like, you know.
Yeah, that's true. So that's satellite TV for you, Ty?
Yeah, and like, I can't imagine who's paying for that now, like, you know.
I think most people are, isn't it?
Sky, really?
I think a lot of people have Sky, yeah.
Fucking hell.
I have Sky box there, but I don't have Sky. I wouldn't.
Is it hooked up to anything, or is it just sort of sitting there?
You get like the free channels, you know?
It's like a Sony TV.
Oh yeah, BBC. Well, BBC and that. Like. Yeah.
Oh, right. So you're getting the English channels through. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't watch it anymore.
Have you seen Derry Girls? A lot of people are talking about Derry Girls.
I watched it today.
And what do you think? Is it funny?
Yeah, it's genuinely funny.
Is it really
funny?
Gotta go on the... Because you can watch it on the Channel 4 website, I think.
That's where I
gotta get up to speed on that. It's supposed to be brilliant.
It's... I've only seen the first two episodes. It's genuinely amusing.
Alright, I gotta get on that.
It's the people were saying, oh, it's like the in-betweeners, but with girls. And it kind of really is. It's very
and
very
Irish.
Yeah, but it's the same kind of shape.
Alright, cool. Alright, I'm looking forward to seeing that now.
Yeah, no, it's genuinely very, it's kind of laugh out loud funny, yeah.
Was there some kind of...
Do you know who's in it?
Who's in it?
Kevin McAteer.
Who's Kevin McAteer?
Not Kevin McAteer, what's his name?
Kevin McAleer.
Kevin McAleer.
What does he do? Is he like a principal or something in it?
He's their uncle.
I love Kevin McAleer.
He's this boring uncle and he plays
brilliant. Oh, I'm definitely fucking watching it now.
Perfect casting.
Fuck, easily like the funniest hour of my life was watching Kevin McAleer upstairs in the King's Head in Galway.
Really?
He was so fucking funny. Like, and he doesn't... I think he's been doing the same hour for 30 years or something. Like, you know, it's so good.
It
like,
fucking
you know,
would be good to this
thing. Yeah, it would be, like, you know.
But he was. He's got brilliant stuff. I love Kevin McAleer.
That's
but he's very funny in it.
He's in Northern Ireland and he was like, one night I just walked out to the mountains and I was walking around just thinking, who am I and what am I doing here? And an RUC officer walked up to me and said, who are you and what are you doing here?
Very funny. And he's a big James Bond dip. That was...
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Bond.
I fucking love Kevin McAleer.
Sarcastic old devil. I was no more pleased to see him.
She couldn't believe her eyes. And if there was one thing you could usually believe, it was your eyes.
Oh, I came in from a hard day's work milking the social security system.
We sat around the television, all 27 of us.
Yeah.
We made our own entertainment in those days by watching the television.
It was super funny.
Oh, fuck. Another super funny lad, Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle is also super funny.
In
he
a
does
very
seem
different
just,
way.
Yeah, but he does just seem like a funny guy, doesn't he?
He's in as much as a handsome man like him can be. He's funny looking. He looks like a cartoon character almost. He's very expressive with his eyes, and I don't know, he's got like the with the shaved head and the kind of slightly pointy ears, like, you know, like he's a pretty handsome dude, but he's also a little bit odd looking. He looks a bit like a cartoon character.
Do you remember his Michael Jackson impression?
Oh, showing him, have you got the clip there? Yeah. Showing them around the gaff. Right, that's pretty funny.
This is Dave Chappelle. This is Dave Chappelle doing Michael Jackson.
It didn't look like he was trying to fuck kids. It looked like he was just trying to impress them. Like, this nigga's Jay-Z for kids. Like, he's just walking through his house. This is my cotton candy machine. It makes 3 tons of cotton candy a day. You know, all the cotton candy you want. This closet is filled with nothing but custom-made karate slippers. Isn't that cool? Shall I have my monkey bring us more cupcakes? Hey guys, just watch a movie. What movie do you want to see? Home Alone. Oh no, don't touch the DVD player. Macaulay Culkin's here, he can act it out. Come on, Macaulay. Act out Home Alone for my guests. And them kids was like, man, you are all right, mister. This is fantastic, man. We had you all wrong. All wrong? What? I don't understand. What do you mean? Huh? Oh, well, you know, man, we thought it was going to be the usual. Like, you're going to have us come over and give us some wine cooler and, you know, suck our dicks. What? Suck your dick? Ugh, you faggot-ass kids. Why are you trying to suck your dick? Nigga, I was trying to show you a better life.
Oh, you cut out the bit where he's like, Bubbles, get these kids out of here. He's so fucking good. He's like, and yep. I was watching it with Kat. Like, we watched, and you know, Kat's radar for stuff that's like, you know, like misogynist or racist or whatever is pretty highly tuned. Like, you know, and all she kept saying was, particularly when we were watching the second one, she was just like, he's so smart. Like, that's what bowled her. She was just like, he's so fucking smart. Like,
he is. Because he has it. He is very expressive and he is just like a funny guy, but he's making very decent
He's thought
valid
about these
points.
Things. He's exactly. not just making the obvious jokes about them, you know. He's really thought about stuff.
No, he definitely has. And he comes out, he seems, if you can take him at face value, he seems pretty convinced Michael Jackson was more sinned against than sinning. Like,
yeah, I don't know where I stand on that. Like,
I'm pretty sure I would disagree with him fairly.
I don't know. I would like to think he didn't do it, but then would I like to think that he went through all of that shit with the media and the police for nothing? No, of course not. But
yeah. You see, you can say he probably was a very naive, very kind of innocent man, Michael Jackson. But naivety and innocence it can be a fucking grenade. Like, I was thinking that. I was listening during the week to the Gardaí apologized about that Kerry Babies thing. And it seemed like, for anybody listening outside Ireland, it's a sort of historical scandal where a kind of a newborn infant showed up murdered and essentially the organs of the state tried to pin it on an innocent woman, essentially. And it's during the week it came out that the DNA tests had finally come through because this was in the early 80s and DNA was not available to them. It finally came through final definitive evidence that this woman had nothing to do with it. This baby was not this woman's. So they apologized. But I remember thinking it was nearly like, because this woman was having an affair with a married man, it was nearly like they were just thinking, well, she must be capable of killing a child then. Mustn't
because
she?
She's having an affair.
Yeah.
But I mean,
but that's naivety. That's willful naivety.
I don't know if naivety is the word I'd use for that.
I think there, it is something.
I think it's kind of a bit darker than that, you know.
I think naivety can go to those places. Okay. I think it was cruel and it was silly. But I also think it was like a culture that couldn't process that stuff, that was naive, that was innocent to it. And that was, an abdication of responsibility in that case, because naivety, you have a responsibility not to be naive. Shit like that happens when you're naive.
Yeah.
And I think it might be just as likely that someone could be very naive and childlike and innocent and have that lead them into some very dark places.
Okay, I get what you're saying. I don't know. I really don't know what to think.
I don't know either. Like, obviously I don't know. Who the fuck knows? I just think that the argument, well, no, he was a very innocent, naive person. He really believed. He did have this very sort of childish attitude. Like, that's neither here nor there, really. In fact, that's what I've just been fucking saying. I can see how that could be an argument in favour just as easily as against, in my opinion. But I don't know. Obviously, I don't know either. I never met the man.
No. I did a few times, so I wasn't really listening when he was talking.
Michael. Danny.
But,
Danny?
Apparently that wasn't even really his voice. Because the guys in this documentary about Bad, Spike Lee has made two documentaries about Michael Jackson.
Mm.
He made one about Bad, and he made one about Off the Wall. And one of the guys on the Bad documentary maintains that he didn't even really talk like that. That he, when you talk to him on the phone, he just sounded like a regular man. Like,
hey,
it's Michael.
Here's Michael. Speak up, I'm hanging my kid over a balcony.
I can't hear you over the loudness of my indecision. But
he was, yeah. I don't know, I always think of him with the South Park voice now.
What was the South Park voice?
No, that's ignorant.
Oh god, that's right. Yeah.
That's a very good episode of South Park.
It is good, yeah.
yeah.
I've discussed South Park a couple of times. I can't even the thoughts of it are like, ugh, yeah, South Park.
Do you really not like it?
No, I don't.
I super love it.
And it's, do you know what? It's not even that I don't like it. It's just like I say, it was like I gorged on it at one point, and then even the thoughts of it. Like, you know when you have a really bad night on tequila, and then like the smell of tequila, you're like, oh, no, get it away from me. Like, you know.
All right. Well, anyway, he doesn't shy away from things like that. From things like talking about Michael Jackson and Trump and Harvey Weinstein and all that
stuff. I think he...
And his positions, as you say, are very well thought out and very...
And he doesn't tiptoe around stuff. Like, I do a little bit of stand-up. I would never dream of fucking going to the places that he goes to, like, you know.
They're dangerous.
Yeah.
But he does catch right. He fucking waltzes through that minefield.
Like. He's really... But it's because he's thought about it. And he's like... He's usually on the side of good, but he's got, you know. But yeah, then that's a weird way to put it as well.
I'm trying to figure that out now.
I don't know. Like he when he was talking about the Harvey Weinstein stuff in the second special, he was going, "Ladies, you're right, and I agree with you, but you know, I'm here for my 3:30 a.m. with Harvey Weinstein."
It is. I mean, that's. That's inarguable. He doesn't say the words, but that simple line obviously says. I mean, there is an obvious connotation there. It's like, what did you think was going to happen at a 3:30 a.m. meeting?
Yeah. Was it 3:30 a.m. in real life, though? I wonder.
Some of them happened late. I don't think they were all business meetings. Like, I think they were after fucking being out and stuff like that.
Can you imagine having to live in like Hollywood and deal with all that? Like, when he was talking about, like, the Louis C.K. stuff, and it was, like, the woman who said that her dealings with Louis C.K. put her off comedy, her comedy dream, and he was just going, that's a brutal spirit.
Yeah.
But I was just kind of thinking, like, I like doing comedy, I like playing music and all that stuff. I would never want to deal with all that. I don't have a dream to have to deal with it at that level. It's just like, no, I'll just, like... Whatever is closest to my house is what I'll deal with, like, you know.
I love to bring in the, he ruined my comedy dream, but then he talks about COINTELPRO and the FBI going after Martin Luther King. And,
so there actually is a Martin Luther King sex tape.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, he was putting it about.
Really?
Yeah.
Kind of humanizes him a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it does, yeah. It's a pity. But sure, who? We all have our Achilles heel. Then
that's true.
Doesn't degrade
if anything, it makes him more relatable. Like, he fucked up. He, you know, like when people weren't looking, he wasn't a saint. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to relate to Gandhi.
Yeah, yeah, that's
that
it.
Prick.
When didn't it come out that Gandhi wasn't like?
Who was he raping?
Was it not raping anybody? But I don't think he was like celibate or anything.
Oh no! Well, no. But he was. He's not a fucking Catholic priest. Like.
No, but I think he was. Like, I don't think he denied himself everything. Like, you know.
Yeah, but it's not about denying him. That's not what his major accomplishments are. He liberated India from the British.
No, but why do I every time I picture him, is he in a robe, like sitting around, what did he do? Like what was his game? What was his trip?
He did independence
that,
from the British.
But I don't know, was he not sort of,
he's kind of a holy man.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Well, he was a lawyer originally. He had some pretty bad experiences in South Africa, I believe. Was it South Africa or Uganda? Somewhere in Africa. But it was South Africa, because he would have, he would have fallen into some of those racial grades that they had down there. It's mental. But essentially, that's his great work was to peacefully and without violence, take on the greatest empire the world had ever seen, and to this day has ever seen, and
until it became,
ask it to leave.
What did Dylan Moran say before Britain came? A permanently moored prison boat full of the disaffected.
When did he say that?
On one of his specials. He's in London, like, you know.
Oh, he's a very funny man, Dylan Moran. Dave Chappelle is very different from Dylan Moran.
Yeah, Dave Chappelle, like, I think Dylan Moran makes everything look like it's coming off the top of his head, and it isn't. It couldn't be, like, you know. Whereas Dave Chappelle,
doesn't Dave Chappelle?
No, but I think sometimes it is coming off the top of Dave Chappelle's head, particularly in that second special.
In the second special, yeah. But there's a very real difference between those two specials.
The second special isn't
polished at all. I get the feeling like the second special, he's just kind of thrown away what would have been his next special after having run that routine.
Yeah.
Solidly for a little while, you know.
The second one, like, it's more like it kind of made me think a little bit of just fucking, not to bring him up, but like, have you ever seen Bill Cosby himself?
Yeah.
Bill Cosby literally like sitting in a chair just talking.
Actually,
I
didn't even fucking think of that. You're right. It was very Cosby-esque.
The thing is, like, I'm sure that, you know, no one wants to. That's buried in there somewhere. That influence, you can't really get rid of it. Like,
actually,
people
who've
been
about him.
Yeah, and the other special,
he does talk
about him. Yeah,
when he was pitching this superhero idea about the superhero who was going around trying to save people, but the only way he could activate his powers was to grab women by the pussy. He reaps, but he saves.
I didn't know Kevin Spacey was going around grabbing men by the pussy. I didn't even think it was possible.
Get your dick out in a business meeting. Nigga, that is the most unprofessional shit I've ever seen in all my days.
He's really funny.
He does. He lays the N-word fairly heavily, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. I think does Chris Rock still do that? Is he the only person really doing that now?
Well, Chris Rock,
because I know Richard Pryor at one point stopped doing it.
Did he?
And made a point of not doing it anymore. He does. He makes reference to it in one of his specials. Like,
It's an interesting one. I don't know how I feel about it. They went seriously after Bill Maher because he made that, what I thought was a fairly innocuous joke.
Yeah.
Was it last year? Yeah, last year.
I fucking hate Bill Maher.
I know. Nobody's going to cry any tears, but at the same time,
have you ever seen the Bill Maher episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee?
Yeah.
And they call each other, what did they call each other? The comedy team of Smug and Arrogant.
Smug and Arrogant, yeah. It's a strange one. I still don't think he deserved to be lashed around the houses now. I watch Bill Maher, like, you know, I watch the things.
No, I couldn't.
He's very annoying, man.
Yeah, didn't we do an episode about him way, way back?
Yeah.
About one of his specials. You must have had a fondness for him at some point.
Yeah, I think it was during the week we were doing that episode, I kind of turned. When I was watching it, I was like, oh.
because it was a famous guy special. You'll see a difference between, Dave Chappelle's kind of an exception, but you'll see a difference between specials from younger comedians and specials from comedians who have since become like TV show hosts or actors or something. Yeah. They're never as good because they go... I remember watching... There was Trevor Noah's special and there was Craig, the Scottish guy.
Craig Ferguson.
Craig Ferguson's special. And they...
Is it any good? I like him.
No, no, it's not. They go to... see, they start off... It's like when you see John Bishop. If you watch a John Bishop DVD and you think, why isn't this guy funny? Like, he's really famous for being funny and he's not funny at all. It's because they're working at their stuff in front of huge audiences and it's much easier to make a huge audience laugh than a small audience. That's why the comparison between the two Chappelle specials is kind of interesting because the second one is a really small audience.
Yeah.
And he's just as good, like, if not maybe like
I think
he's probably more commanding, like in the smaller room, like, you know.
But he's also, is he?
Yeah, I think he is.
I think he's making a more kind of nuanced point. He's navigating a very I have to say I've come across something that during the week I was struck by a thing.
Something fell off a shelf.
No, it was that whole Aziz Ansari thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I was kind of vacillating back and forth on it. Because originally I thought, oh, this is ridiculous. Why is he? They're going after him for nonsense. And then I started reading a bit more about it. And he had, like, his fingers down people's throats.
What?
But he was, like, putting his finger in her mouth and shit like that. And she said, well, I was giving him nonverbal cues that I was uncomfortable. I was like, and I, at the time I thought, well, you can't expect a man to be a mind reader. But then thinking...
You had to give someone a verbal cue when they've got their finger in your mouth.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I as a single man, I go on Tinder dates. I didn't know we were allowed to put our fingers in people's mouths now and I'd have fucking people defending me. I was like, really? You did that? But then this was apparently after he'd gone down. Anyway. I don't know. This is what had set me thinking about it, right?
I haven't even read that full article. I've only seen bits and bobs here and there.
It's interesting. I would say... Now, I hate when people do this. If a man did this or if a woman did that... Because, right, men and women are different. And different rules apply, right? That said... people are going to be pissed off with me over that. But it is also true. If... a woman went down on a dude. Having said what I just said, if a woman went down on a dude and after he'd come, she's like, okay, right, my turn. And he was like, nah, I'm not into it really. You would think that's ungentlemanly. So whatever, you know, I don't want to say unladylike, but once you've had your fun and you refuse to return the fun, it's ungentlemanly.
I know what you're saying, but you don't know someone's thought process. Like, at what point...
No.
She might have had it in her head, oh, this is a terrible idea, before anything happened, and then she let it go too far, and in the middle of that act, she's like, oh, what am I doing? This is terrible, like, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to know, like...
Yeah, no, you'll never know. You'll never get to the end of it. You never get to the bottom of that, because they were the only two people there. But I, during the week, realised I was conflating two separate things. And I've been much easier in my spirit, Danny, since I realised that I was conflating those things. Because on the one hand, you have this kind of Me Too thing and people coming out with these revelations. And that's good. It's necessary. It's absolutely, definitely necessary. Because there really isn't. This all went into my thinking. There really isn't any kind of history or experience for any of that stuff. Because sex is different for women and men. Because it inevitably had to be. Because all throughout history, women bore consequences from sex that men didn't need to. They could get pregnant, right? So fucking sex, for women, sex was a fucking loaded gun to your head. It was a gun to your head and you didn't know whether there was a bullet in the chamber. But it was very potentially going to change your life. Whereas for men, it was completely different. So obviously, men and women had these different contexts to sex. But since the 60s, with the pill, with sort of reliable artificial contraception, it's a whole new world that has never existed in all of human history. So you have to try and figure it out. Like, so I was kind of going, okay, well, that maybe it's not inherent nastiness. Maybe it's just... okay, the rules have completely changed now and we're still trying to find our feet. Having said that, it's good it's all coming out. It's good that people see the hypocrisy in the way women are treated. That's all fantastic. But I was also conflating it. There is a sort of online culture that is just bullying culture. It's just bullying culture. And it's this sort of performance of virtue, performance of morality. And it's just bullying. It's an excuse to go after people. And I was kind of... And I do believe there's an element of that.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in the Aziz Ansari case, not necessarily in any of the cases. I just think if you were to go on Twitter and follow the hashtag and look at some of the comments and the way people are being outraged and the elements of the stories that they're being outraged about, I would be surprised if you didn't find that sort of outrage culture inherent in it. So I'm not paying attention to that anymore. I don't give a shit. I will say Aziz Ansari behaved very sleazily. But I have no problem. I would go see him tomorrow in a film, like, or I would watch. I might watch his thing tomorrow in Netflix. It's, you know, he was.
He's someone I had a lot of time. Like, well, I just, you know, had. I don't mean to say it like that, but I watched the first season of Master of None in a day. Like, it's really good. You know.
Okay.
So, and he's written a book about single life or trying to find love or whatever the fuck it was about. Like,
I like his stand up. Like.
I'm not the biggest fan of his stand-up, no, I have to say. I prefer him in stuff. That? Like, I don't think so. No, I don't think we did swap
okay,
it.
Okay.
I
liked it.
I just, he wouldn't be the hugest. I don't hate it or anything, like, you know, but I must prefer him as an actor in stuff.
Yeah, he's very good. He's very charming. But that was my thinking. So from now on, I'm just going to fucking have to. Dave Chappelle helped me with that, by the way. His arguments were very compelling.
Well, he made that joke about Ben Affleck. He was like, Ben Affleck...
Which I believe we were talking about.
Were we talking about this last week?
Or? No, a few weeks back. When we were talking about him saying, oh, I think it's awful what happened. And you're one like,
I told you, you knew all of this. You touched Diddy in 95 on MTV. And he's like, all right, fellas, I'm out.
Yeah. you see, it's because there's a separate thing happening, which is that outrage culture. So you're just going to have to ignore the outrage culture.
Yeah, and it's pretty...
I'm going to go see the next film Ben Affleck's in. I don't care if it's a piece of shit.
Solidarity! I know what you mean about outrage culture, like, but it's gotten out of hand. People are outraged at everything. They're like, absolutely. What? Superman's suit is darker than the last one? You know, or whatever. Exactly. It's just like, heck, you can't be outraged at everything. Pick your fucking battles, like, you know.
But it's not even that. Even about kind of important... You see, that doesn't really matter. Because who gives
but it,
a fuck?
No, it doesn't matter. But people are it's like everything's a matter of life and death now. Like, no matter what it is, like, you know.
But I think there's something more important, because if you take that outrage culture and you let it loose on something as important as sort of trying to figure out this new place of women in society, you're going to end up defeating yourself, because it is bullying and it is ultimately unfair. So you have to kind of ignore all that shit and just try and come to some kind of reasonable conclusion, like, you know.
Yeah.
Which I think is not a million miles away from what Chappelle was saying.
No, right? that whole second special is basically about that. I wonder, did he mean it to be about that? Like, he goes into some pretty long speeches that aren't comedy.
Yeah.
Per se, like, you know, I wonder, did he mean that, or was it just something that happened on the night? Or
it kind of reminded me a little bit of when I went to see Reg Hunter.
Really? Yeah.
Store. No, Chappelle's was better, to be 110%.
Well, Reg Hunter is a good comedian, but it's like comparing fucking Damien Rice and Bob Dylan, you know.
That's harsh.
Well, it's not really. A lot of people like Damien Rice. Ryan Adams and Bob Dylan.
Yeah, okay. I wonder how many people like Damien Rice. Say even his mother's wavers.
Well, say Ryan Adams and Bob Dylan. But, like, Dave Chappelle is just, like, he's just, like, he's... He came out of the womb a comedian, like, you know. He's just, like...
Yeah.
Every little thing he does is like, it has got, like, skill and confidence behind it, you know?
I was thinking of Billy Connolly when I was watching him. Not because they're necessarily similar as comedians, but I also kind of think they are both...
I think they're just naturally funny people. I think if neither of them had been comedians, they would be the funniest guys in the pub.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, they'd be cracking people up anyway.
Particularly Billy Connolly. I think Billy Connolly does just walk his personality onto the stage, and it's just a bit louder than usual.
Have you seen him since he got the Parkinson's?
No, my mother and my brother went to see him in Dublin, like, last year.
You told me about this.
They said it was really good, like, you know.
He
has a DVD out since then. I haven't seen it, to be honest.
I watched a bit on YouTube. It was kind of bittersweet, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I can imagine.
He was talking about the Parkinson's, and he, like you said, he was making really funny jokes, but the whole time you were like, because he was an energetic comedian, and now he kind of has to stand in one place, really, and you can tell.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom's dad, my granddad, died of Parkinson's. And it's like standing straight becomes something you have to concentrate on, like, you know.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see it in
a... Like, I saw, there was a thing on telly last year where they commissioned three different artists to paint portraits of him. Did you see this thing?
No.
I think it was on UTV or something. And one of the guys is a Glasgow artist that Billy Connolly's known since the fucking folky days or whatever, right, like, you know. And he just meet in the museum in Glasgow, and the guy, you know, they film the meeting because it's a fucking show, like, you have to, and
yeah,
your man kind of walks up, oh, Billy, I haven't seen you forever, how are you feeling? And he just goes, terrible. You know, he laughs when he says it, but he's like, I feel terrible.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, he was like, in his day, man, he was fucking...
He was the best comedian in the world.
He was amazing, like, you know.
There was some kind of period of time there, probably in the middle 80s, where he was the best comedian in the world.
One of my favourite bits of his is when he's talking about the different kinds of shampoo they have now. I saw it! Egg and mushroom shampoo! It's like, when I was a boy, that would have been straight into the frying pan. Where's my shampoo, by the way? Your father's away to work with it on his sandwiches.
Oh, he's such a funny man. And Chappelle's like that.
He did the town hall in the early 80s.
There you go.
Yeah, my parents went to see him. They said they were standing in the queue outside, and he turned up while everybody was queuing to go in. And he was walking up the queue going, oh, I hear he's fucking shite. Don't bother.
You're a very funny man.
Yeah.
You're a very funny man. Didn't get as political as Chappelle does. He spends a lot of time talking about Trump.
Chappelle does. Yeah. His stuff about Trump is pretty funny.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
I'm in Trump country, in the middle of all the poor whites.
I
never had a problem with white folks, but the poor whites are my least favorite.
But he was saying that, like, that thing he was saying about, like, I knew before the rest of America did that Trump was going to win. I kind of knew as well because of where I was, like, you know. Stuff. And this is a little bit going to feed into the Jeff Rosenstock thing as well. But I was among those people, and it was like, Trump is absolutely going to win this election. All these people, not only do they hate Hillary, but they're tired of being made fun of, and this is their fucking spokesperson. Mm-hmm. Or so they think. He's more like their fucking mascot, like a goofy mascot, you know.
He's a wanker.
But
why choose him as your spokesperson? Jesus,
it's ridiculous because he as a person. I'll finish that first, actually.
Okay.
All
right, go on.
As a person, he stands for none of the values those people hold.
No.
And, but yet they're like, oh, here's our guy. And that's the great line in the Chappelle thing where he's like, he's going to fight for us. He's like, lady, you are poor. He's fighting for me.
Although he does also say in the special, isn't it in the special where he was like, shut the fuck up, money?
Oh, that's in one of the other specials.
Oh, is it? Oh, I must have muxed him up. It's very funny.
What's the line?
Well, he's talking about having so much money, you have shut the fuck up. You can tell people to shut the fuck up. I got quiet please money at best. At Jay-Z, he got shut the fuck up money. But the tragic irony is Beyonce got no you shut the fuck up money.
That's so good.
That's brilliant. He's a very funny man. Like.
That I don't have any racial prejudices, but in my musical prejudices as I've grown up, I think I've missed the whole Beyonce thing because That album Lemonade is supposed to be fucking amazing, and I've never
heard a lot of people going on about it. Yeah.
But it's like saying you've never fucking heard like Thriller or whatever. Like, you know, it's I think culturally it's at that level, but I've just never listened to it. Like, you know,
she's cool. I really like Beyoncé.
See, this is the thing. I don't know anything about her really, like, apart from the fact that she seems to carry herself well in public.
They just seem to me like a normal couple, and then that video came out of her sister beating the shit out of Jizzy.
What video was that? Is that Solange? Is that sister? Because she's a musician as well.
I haven't a clue.
Okay. But what was the video?
Her sister beating the shit out of Jizzy.
For any good reason? Like, or?
I have no idea.
Jesus.
It was just in an elevator. Like, it was in public. It was CCTV.
Can you imagine the fucking pressure those people are under, though? You can't walk out of your house without it being like a TMZ or whatever. Like, you know.
Maybe. Yeah, but that's the world you. That's the world you inhabit.
It's what they wanted.
Yeah, I kind of like, our maverick renegade.
So do I. I know we're joking, status. But I actually do like it.
So do I.
It's there forever. Wants it.
Yeah. So, Dave Chappelle, man, a very fucking insightful man, I think.
Yeah, the two specials were great. I think we watched them pretty much in a row. Yeah. One morning last week, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we just. It was just one of those things. I'm always like it's always like a bit of a risk putting on something to watch with your wife, because you're like, oh god, just please don't be misogynist, you know, like, just don't ruin it for me, Dave. I want to watch your special, but if it gets too fucking ropey, I'll have to put it off, like, you know.
I don't understand that. Like,
what do you mean?
I don't understand. Like, I mean, maybe it's misogynist, but maybe it's also funny. Maybe,
but I don't know. But things. I'm not saying that Kat thought it was, but it does. When I'm watching stuff with her, it does get to a point where she might just be like, "Oh God, this." Like, she gets pretty fucking exhausted with the sort of male gaze, I think, and having to hear about it all the time. Like, you know,
they are a bunch of gays.
And like, if it is, like, if it gets too much, she's just like, I can't watch the rest of this. This is fucking nonsense. This is the same bullshit that we're forced to watch again and again. Like, you know?
I find it hard to sympathize with people who get head up about politics, or who make. That's a. Do you know how I realize this? On Tinder, that's an automatic swipe left for me.
What is?
Political.
Swipe left. I can't have it. Like, I can't hack it. I don't want to go on a date with you and end up. I wouldn't mind going on a date with you, but I will not go on a debate with you.
I remember talking to a woman at a party in Galway years ago and her saying, "Oh, don't get me started on politics." And I just went, "Okay."
I can't hack it. Like, because it's so fucking arrogant. Like, this will come up again with what's his name?
Jeff Rosenstock.
Yeah. Because it's so arrogant, like, and it's so stupid. It's so stupid to think you have the fucking answers. If you can tell me your politics...
Dave Chappelle thinks he has the answers.
No, Dave Chappelle works his way through to an answer. And I like that. That's somebody wrestling with
the issue. I
think
he thinks he has the answers.
By the end of it.
I think... There's no way that man couldn't be at least... there's no way he can't be arrogant, like, you know, because... Like,
he opens that special with, you know what? I've always been this good. It's not a challenge for me anymore.
But this is the thing, like, he, you know, every few years he resurfaces as, like, fucking, you know, like, fucking some kind of, like, comedy vision of the heavens. Like, and every few, comedy, and he sort of deigns us with a special and then fucking vanishes again, like, and... But and he's good enough to warrant the attention. He absolutely is, but it can't not have gone to his head. And like, and I 100% do think he thinks he has the answers for everybody.
Yeah,
like,
but Danny, he at the start of that those specials, he will take you by the hand and he will lead you through his train of thought.
But he does.
And he will take you to an answer, which I think is reasonable. And you can see has been reasoned out. That's different from these bullshit ideologues who just.
Well, like, that especially, the second one where he's going on about, like, he talks about him leaving his TV show like it was some sort of monumental shift in world politics or something, and you're just like, man, you left a TV show. Like, you know,
no, hang on. He talks about it.
He like talks about it like it fucking spun the world around like a basketball. Well, like,
it probably did spin the world around for him,
but I've just seen him. I've seen him bang that drum on a few different things now at this point, and you're like, lad, you left a TV show. Like,
okay, he turned down $50 million.
Yeah, why does he keep saying that?
Because it's an impressive thing.
I mean, I know, but I don't know. He spoke about his dumb sketch show like it was important.
Well, people really love that show.
No, people really, but yeah, but I mean,
more than I do. I
know, I like it now. When I say dumb sketch show, I mean in the grander fucking scheme of human life, it is a dumb little thing.
Yeah, but it's obviously been hugely influential.
Yeah, when he was saying on the thing that he was saying that I had to watch all these other people do my show. It was he saying Key and Peele, and Amy, you mentioned Schumer. Someone else. I don't think they are doing his show. I think that's really unfair.
Possibly.
And arrogant.
What's the difference between one sketch show and the other?
Well, I mean, what do you mean? Like,
I mean,
but then what's the difference? Like, why is he just not doing? Like, why does he think that he invented it, and why does he? You know, he's just doing another sketch show. So are they doing his show as much as he's doing Kids in the Hall or whatever?
I accept that, right? He's probably let it swell his head a wee bit. Fair enough. But I also feel like you can't. If I ever turn down $50 million for my art, you betcha. Fucking behind, I would be talking about it 60 years later. Like Paul Revere, remember I'm talking about Paul Revere? Remember, damn, the British were coming, you niggas were all asleep. Man, we're lucky I was awake.
Yeah, no, that was funny. So but
that's what he's doing, like, when he's talking about his sketch show, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, no, I get
it. And he does puncture, he does deflate it. Like, the guys, I got people coming up to me going, man. I respect that. That's so amazing. You're my hero. Man, nigga, I don't want to be your hero. I want to be rich.
He must be rich, though.
Yeah, at this stage he is. But it sounds to me like things got tough for him for a wee while. Probably not tough in real
No,
terms.
Not tough. Like, tough it is, like, for people in this town. Like,
yeah, like, if I lost my job tomorrow, things would get tough. But he's probably not that, you know. Oh, down to the last million. Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Might have to sell the beach house.
But he is, he's hilarious. Like, he's an amazing comedian. But I don't think Key and Peele or Amy Schumer are doing his show. I think that's maybe pushing it a little bit. Like,
she's
a
controversial figure.
She's really funny as well. Like, her special is really good. That I haven't seen every bit of Inside Amy Schumer, but it's great. Like, the stuff I have seen is really good.
Aren't there some comedians claiming that she has been lifting jokes?
Yeah, there are, but I don't know. I've heard her on a few different things, like I think she was on Opie and Anthony and a few different things defending that, and I thought she made a pretty good case for it. Like she said that one of the, I can't remember which joke it was, but one of her writers kind of said to her, oh, it's pretty fucking obvious, that's a joke that a million people could have come up with. And she kind of said, yeah, but fuck it, you know. Yeah. I think it's funny. I'm just going to do it. And then when it was in the special, she got blowback saying it was someone else's. I don't know. Like,
it's. I know.
I think she's had a pretty rough time of it as well. Like, you know, for like, I just don't. I think she's gotten an awful lot of shit she really didn't deserve. You know.
Yeah. No. I think that's true too.
And Trainwreck is really good. Like, I don't know if you've seen it. It's a really funny film. Like, you know.
But I will say that. Look, I find her funny. The last fuckable day thing is one of the funniest things I ever
saw. Yeah.
But then it does have a lot of real.
It's like, how could you? It's it's like the fucking, it's like the Traveling Wilburys or something. Yeah. Like, you know, how could it be bad? Like, you know,
exactly. But I do recall one time now I got mildly pissed off with her. Some young fella who I didn't know. I mean, it's not that like I was coming down on his side. He made it. He was interviewing her.
I remember
the blog or something. It wasn't. He had like this blog or YouTube channel or something. He was just a young fella. Like, was interviewing her, and he made some slut joke, which is very in keeping with Amy Schumer's output. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Now, should he have been making the joke? He's not as funny as he thinks he is. There's no question about that. Like,
It's not really a very good joke. It wasn't. I'm not fucking still giggling about it now. But she got really kind of... She took umbrage. Like, she took umbrage.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I don't know that you can have your output be the way your output is.
And not expect that kind of joke to be made.
Yeah, I mean, but also this guy was a fan.
If he's interviewing her for a blog, you must kind of think, like, someone, he should be thinking, all right, she's doing you a fucking favor here. Like, she's like, she doesn't need to be talking to you, like, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think it was meant to be mean-spirited. I thought he, my impression of it was that he was getting into the,
I think this was all
that kind of her humor.
I think this was all solved pretty amicably, as it turned out. I think there was some kind of conversation afterwards where everything got straightened out.
I like that, because I find her very funny, but I did think, okay, you can't be consistently making slut jokes about yourself, and then when somebody cracks essentially the same joke in a spirit of fun with you, get.
But do you not think there's an element of that, you know, that element of stand up where it's like, or any kind of comedy really, it's make fun of yourself before somebody else does. You're making fun of yourself with all the shit that you know that people would say about you, but it doesn't make it any easier to hear it. Like,
it's a brittle spirit then.
I didn't agree with him there, to be honest, when he was talking about the brittle spirit. I was thinking, some people just want to do some funny stuff and not have to deal with that. That's not a brittle spirit. That's like, look, I really want to go up and do open mics, but I don't want to have to fucking beat my way through a forest of dicks to get to the stage, like, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. Having said that, would Louis C.K. masturbating in front of you ruin your day?
What do you mean?
I think there are levels of... I can't imagine. Louis C.K. is not a handsome man.
No.
At my most generous, I don't believe, at my absolute most generous, hanging off the side of the fucking generosity cliff by my fingernails, reaching out as far as I can... At my most generous, I don't think I could find any pleasure in watching him masturbate, right? I think if it happened, I would be like, that was weird.
Yeah.
I'd go get some Subway. You know, or something. Or a Domino's or something.
I don't think I'd react like that somehow.
I can't imagine I would let it ruin my day, let alone my career.
Well, yeah,
I genuinely can't imagine that.
But I don't know, like, if it's constant, if that sort of shit is just constant, like, even someone like who's actually pretty respected, someone like Dan Harmon recently came out and said that he made a female writer's life pretty difficult on Community.
Oh.
Where he was he was into her, but he, like, really made her life really difficult, like, you know. And
I've been into people. I have to say, I'm very surprised how much people are willing to forgive Aziz Ansari. I really fucking can't imagine sticking my fingers down into somebody's mouth.
That's very strange. It's fucking like, I'm sure even a dentist sort of never quite gets used to it. Like, you know.
It's just like, I just feel like, oh, you did what? But then, if you've just eaten somebody out, there's a certain expectation of...
Awful fucking phrase, isn't it?
Lovely thing.
Oh, Jesus, it's a bad phrase.
I have to say, right, when I was thinking about that, if I'd gotten that far and I'd been going down and it was, and she was like, okay, I think we're finished with this now, I'd be like, I'm happy out, that'll do me for, that'll do me for a fortnight, love. That's my...
You'd be able to walk away and be like, fair enough.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's no question I would be. If she said it, if she was giving me non-verbal cues, that's a different thing. But, I what was I even saying there? There was some point I was going to make. I can't remember now.
I don't know.
Oh yeah, I feel. Well, look.
I can't remember. It's already gone.
End of the line is, I think he says it himself. Not everybody's as strong as everybody else. Not everybody's going to react the same way as everybody else. Having said that. I think there's an element. I think. Sorry, am I very, very low in the mix?
Just in case.
I do also think there's something to the brittle spirit thing.
I don't. I think there's a world of fucking difference between No, I didn't necessarily agree with that brittle spirit stuff, because it's like some people just want to fucking make funny shit and don't want to have to look at Louis C.K.'s dick to have to do it, like, you know.
So what if they said, Louis, I want you to understand, now, this is not a defense of Louis C.K. pulling his dick out, right?
Tell me more.
Yeah. I don't know the choreography, but you get the idea. This is not a defense of Louis C.K. pulling his dick out. However, to let it ruin your career, there is something there. I think he's on to something. And also the idea that if you look like Brad Pitt, we never heard of this.
I don't really agree with that either, but I just... He says in the special himself, he says, look, I don't say these things to be mean, I say these things to be funny. And sometimes the funniest thing to say is mean.
You know, Stuart Lee with James Corden.
Oh, that bit is so funny.
It is incredibly funny, but I remember him justifying it. I remember listening to an interview with him where he was justifying it. It was like, some guy was going, wouldn't you say that James Corden, as a comedian, understands your set and what you're doing better than 99% of your audience?
Oh, yeah, I listened to that as well, yeah.
And he was like, look, I'm not... It's just that if he expresses admiration or a like for my work, objectively, there's the politest thing to do, there's the funniest thing to do, there's the politest thing to do, there's the most respectful thing to do. But objectively, the funniest thing to do is become outraged by that.
But wasn't he saying he had to brush past him one night in a corridor to go up and do his gig, wherever he was doing a gig, and it was like... He didn't even say hello to him like Stuart Lee. He said he couldn't even say hello to him because he was about to go up on stage and like do material about him.
Oh, see, there's the problem with Stuart Lee.
See, that's the same thing with Charlie Brooker as well. Like, you know, but the he was doing a bit about the Culture Show, and he in the early stages of the bit he made fun of Lauren Laverne, and she got wind of it and she was not fucking happy at all, like, oh, you know, really? She fucking slammed him in some interview did.
Oh, is there no sense of humor, Lauren?
Well, he just said, like, it's a shame that happened because I actually really like her. I think she's really great. Like, yeah, I love her fucking radio show, like, you know. But he was just saying it was, you know, like, I do sometimes think he could do that stuff without alienating himself from everybody, you know. But
it's kind of weirdly funny to watch a man do that.
It is funny, of course it's funny, but he's also been funny before without doing that, you know.
Yeah,
he does kind of, you know, he's putting himself in that position. No one's making him, you know.
Pear cider made from 100% pure pears.
100% pear. There's more than this. Must be 1,000 pear in there.
That was very funny. Yeah. Listen, we're already well over the
hour. Do you want to take the last Dave Chappelle clip and move on? Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say before we move on?
No, I think he's a very insightful, very insightful, very intelligent,
funny.
Very funny man, yeah. No?
So, can you imagine that was what someone in another country who'd never met you was saying about you? You'd be pretty chuffed if you knew.
I presume they are. Listen, here he's talking about Harvey Weinstein.
Harvey Weinstein's probably the first person that I ever looked at a photograph of and was like, yeah, he rapes. I'm not sure this motherfucker has a choice. Not a handsome man. Not, a lot of meat and extra skin on his face. Yeah, he's ugly. You know the sad part is? He's done so well in life, he probably doesn't know he's ugly. You know, when you're good looking, everybody will tell you, oh, you look wonderful, you're so great looking. But when you're ugly, you gotta figure that shit out for yourself. It's a lot of putting clues together through the years. Why am I not getting in the club? I got all the right shit on. Brad Pitt doing that shit, you wouldn't have heard a peep. The girl just come back down like, I got the part.
I love that thing he does where he slaps the microphone on his leg.
Yeah.
I wonder what the story with that is. He kept doing it. At one point he made a joke about it because he did it that much. He went, order!
Yeah. Do you know one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life?
What?
Was Stuart Lee using the microphone to make it sound like he was...
He was chiseling a headstone. Yeah, it's very funny. Yeah, it's
brilliant.
It's literally, that's about 5 minutes long of him scraping a microphone up and down a stand, like, you know.
But Richard Littlejohn is
scumbag.
It's very satisfying to see that man turn into a target.
And then it's like, there's all this banging for ages, and then it just says, cunt.
Not a man working as a cunt.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Bouncing on, Niall, to something a little bit different.
Bounce is not the operative word today, Dan.
No, I don't feel good today.
We were
too I feel alright, but I'm just, like, tired.
So am I. That's what happens the day after cards.
Yeah, yeah. And I was thinking,
none of the fucking hand grenade fucking players were
that's what I was thinking, night. Yeah. I think if I had been there when maybe some of the more serious bods had been about, I think I might have been like, alright, you can divide my chips up between yourself, you know.
I've done that before.
Just stepped away and being like, fuck this.
Well, no, I remember a couple of times it was down to me and Shane Riley. I think it happened twice. It was down to me and Shane Riley. And we just split the pot. And we shook hands and split the pot. Like, we got 40 quid each. Like,
that's,
you know?
That's great.
We're not, just for everybody, for the context, we're not like serious gamblers. We come in, we throw a tenner in the pot.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The chips, like,
well, at some point last night when my chips were all gone, someone said, you know, you have the option to buy back into the game. I was like, what do you mean? And you're like, oh, you put in more money, you get more chips. And I was like, don't be fucking ridiculous.
You want the guitar though, you fucking played us out then.
We had a good old sing song. Yeah, it was good.
Oh, it was good. Do you remember fucking day we caught the train? That,
yeah.
We were fairly going at that.
That was good fun.
I got myself arrested. It was like college again.
Just dredged that out of the canal.
I wonder what Ciara Vaughan's doing. Do you remember her house parties?
Yeah, they used to be great. Yeah.
They were spectacular.
To the extent that it was mostly us just sort of sitting around talking. But
I've never understood that. You know, though, when you go to see a film and they show a college house party and it's like,
it's a huge house somewhere and it's like, dum dum bum bum bum.
Yeah,
it's
like fucking heebie-jeebies. Like, it's...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was never my experience of college parties. And I wouldn't want... I wouldn't trade my experience.
Oh, no. They were more sort of... They're almost kind of philosophical sometimes. Like, they're always great. Like,
we were sitting around... We were basically sitting in a ring in Ciara Vaughan's front room. Various front rooms, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Passing a joint and fucking
singing tunes and bullshitting.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You had a guitar.
It was great, because in college, it's not like I would have been gigging very much. There wasn't an awful lot of open mics in town, and it was while I was at college.
That's changed, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it has changed, actually. But it was while I was at college that was great, because it was like a weekly gig, almost. Like, you know, if I was learning something, I'd be like, God, this would be fucking great now if we have a party during the week or whatever, like, you know. So it was like, it was like a gig. It was great, like, you know.
But last night really genuinely reminded me of that, because I think I kept requesting songs
from the era.
Play Got Myself Arrested. Play Paranoid Franco. It was
good fun, man. I enjoyed it. I don't feel like I held things up too much not knowing how to play.
No, you didn't. You should have just thrown yourself into it.
I will, the next time. Like,
your first
know.
Game or two, just kiss the tenor goodbye.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Throw
yeah.
yourself straight into it. And then after that, you'll have a reasonable.
I was kind of like, I would.
Did you feel you were getting a feel for it by the end?
A little bit, yeah. I'm not super quick on the uptake with these things. I really struggle with the. If I don't have a super duper fucking specific focused interest in something, it's very. It's very difficult for me to even take in the basics sometimes, like, you know. It's like it's like some kind of fucking condition or something. Like, so the rules to poker, it's like part of my brain is going, why the fuck do you need to know this? Like, you know, why? Like, it's almost like there's someone at the bouncer at the door of my brain going, no, wait, what? What's this? The rules for poker? We don't need your sword in here.
Motherfucker, motherfucker.
Yeah. So I was a little bit self-conscious in the fact where I was like, hey, I don't know. Like,
it really doesn't matter.
But everybody was very cool about it.
Yeah, they're sound lads. They're sound heads. There was... Motherfucker just reminded me. The first episode of Derry Girls. It's set in like 1992 or something.
I don't watch this fucking Derry Girls.
It's really funny. It was set in like 1992 and...
Can I grab another one of these beers?
Yeah, you sure you don't want to?
No, I'll go for beer, actually.
That's more than
one. That one went down quite well.
There you go. It's set in like I said, the early 90s. And the first episode is their first day back at school
Oh,
in
cool.
like 1992 or something. But over the summer, one of them seen Pulp Fiction.
So she just keeps going, motherfuckers! Right, motherfuckers!
It's very funny.
You know what? That sounds like something that we could, a cat would enjoy as well. It's very hard finding shows we both like. Because she's steaming ahead. She watches a lot of stuff on her phone. Whereas sometimes if I'm messing around on my phone, it's generally with fucking Spotify and, you know, I'm not in the middle of any show apart from we watch The Good Place and we watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, yeah.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is really funny.
I've seen the odd episode. Yeah,
I really like it. But
not enough to actually watch the whole lot.
I got you to watch a documentary, Niall.
Good thinking. Get us back on the unreal stand.
A band called Bomb the Music Industry, a musician called Jeff Rosenstock.
Yeah.
And the documentary is called Never Get Tired?
Never Get Tired.
Never Get Tired. This is what Bomb the Music... So he was in a ska band in the early... Or in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s.
Mm.
And he had this whole vision about... Basically, what Radiohead ended up doing, free music. Like, you know, he was really sick about...
At that point as well, yeah, go on.
Cool. He was really tired of having to deal with merch and selling people stuff, and it made him uncomfortable, so he just thought, do you know what? The albums are all online for free. Pay for them if you want. Don't if you don't. All right, you've issues with that. This is going to be interesting. So I'm going to blast a bit of this tune. This is the first... I never heard of them until... We were listening to a YouTube playlist that Kat had made of her favourite songs, and this was one of the bands that were on it, and I'd never heard of them, and this is the song I heard first. This is called Sadder Weirder. I put all my books in a box to put them in a concrete cube and underneath more boxes and hidden behind boxes. I'll get in one too. I just threw out another gift. I know it had a bit of thought, but Mary, we won't talk soon. I have no use for Crocs now. I have no use for gifts. They're gonna be piles. I'm gonna be a pack rat. Let's go shit. That's a track called Sadder Weirder. That is Jeff Rosenstock and Bomb the Music Industry. He was in a band called the Arrogant Sons of Bitches, the ska band. That band eventually broke up and he started Bomb the Music Industry. And they really, through the internet and through making their own record label, their own online record label and putting their own stuff out, they really, really got a following like all over the States. Like, you know, and they were... The thing I liked about the documentary is that we were talking recently about, you know, were we talking about U2 or who the fuck were we talking about? Where we were like, what does a huge rock star have to say to me about my life and the way I live? And I feel like he is representative of people like us. Like, you know, I know you didn't like him or whatever. I get it, but you know, broadly speaking, he's a fucking dude.
That's not true.
Broadly speaking, he's just a man. Like, he's trying to make a go of it as a musician.
It's not true that I didn't like it. I'm not saying it's not true that he's a dude.
It's not true. Shock revelation on an Irish podcast about Jeff Rosenstock. But I just think, yeah, he's making music and he's trying to be an artist in his mid-30s and trying to figure out what that looks like and what shape that takes. He's like the thing I like about him is he's not willing to sell out. He's doing his own thing. I mean, look, it's the same with the Brittle Spirit people. Like, thing is about that the Brittle Spirit is not the spirit to make funny stuff. It's the spirit to be famous. Like, and yeah. I feel like that's the Brittle Spirit that got broken, is the wanting to be famous. I don't feel like he wants to be famous. I feel like he thinks that the thing he's good at in life is putting these bands together and writing songs and fucking playing stonking gigs and then trying to figure out how to keep doing that, you know?
It was a bit of a roller coaster, this documentary, because I really, for the first half, I really did not like it. It was teeth grin. Like, I was,
oh, really? Was it that bad?
Chalkboard. I was like, you fucking dickheads. It was very irritating to me. And then as it goes through, and it's because it's telling the story of his career so far,
And he's only our age. Like, it's not like there's much of a career to even tell the story about.
I feel like I grasped some home truths earlier than he did, though.
In what sense?
Yeah. I feel like I feel like he had had ideas that were so shallow about what art is and about what commerce is. And just shallow and childish and stupid.
But he was also 22.
Exactly.
You know?
And I didn't get that. It was not that I didn't get that. I thought this documentary was putting that forward as... was lionizing that. And I remember thinking, that is... you drop that, it'll crack. That's a fucking iPhone of an ideology. There's no getting away. That's silly. But the actual documentary, once it moves, once he comes closer to our age and he has things like, oh shit, I really should be paying for health insurance. And
oh yeah, because one of the lads really fucks up his... that was Niall's thumb on the computer, by the
way. Oh yeah,
way.
Sorry.
Like a fire.
Sorry. Yeah. That scene, I was nearly screaming at the fucking thing.
Oh yeah, that was so weird. And like, I could... like, the scene is, your man is trying to open... I think, did they read online or something that to open a bottle of... is it a bottle of champagne or whatever? Yeah. That if you put rubber under it and keep banging it off like the wall or whatever, eventually the pressure will make the cork shoot out and you'll be able to drink it or whatever. He's banging it, he's got it in a crock and he's banging it off a fucking pole. The thing smashes to smithereens and cuts all the way down his arm.
Yeah.
And it's like, now I think that on that documentary, I think as soon as that happened and the camera's pointing in his face, he felt fucking stupid. He wasn't going, oh well, whatever, way, rock and roll. He was like, I'm a fucking idiot, with his holding it, raising his hand above his head to let the fucking blood go down.
But after all this shit of them going, oh, I don't really want to sell t-shirts, like, people can make donations, we have to keep it under $10, and we've got... he's fucking bleeding, pumping blood out of his fucking hand. He's holding the hand over the head to try and squeezing it to try and stop the fucking flow. And he's going, man, I hope I don't need stitches. I have no health insurance.
But I'll tell you here now.
But all I wanted to do was scream into the fucking thing. Of course you have no fucking health insurance. You're giving away fucking t-shirts.
Niall.
Jesus Christ. Why do you think other people... ask people to pay for this shit.
But before Obamacare, nobody had fucking health insurance.
Yeah, listen.
There's musicians that you and I have talked about on this podcast, Danny, whose albums I have bought, who don't have health insurance.
Danny, that's fair enough.
It's not.
But if you're a person who has opted out of the system deliberately, then you can't then complain. I mean, I just wanted to reach in and slap him like, I don't have health insurance. I was like, why do you think other people are selling things for money? They're trying to get these necessary things. Like, you're a fucking toolbox.
But did you not think...
I'm sorry, that was still at the point in the fucking documentary where I was really, really angry with them for being such idiots. But did
you
not think,
when you look at some of the interviews later on, that guy is not entirely on board with the idea of everything being free? That's the fucking impression I got. Yeah. Now, also, I'll say, I saw Jeff Rosenstock play in Ithaca in 2016. That guy is still in Jeff Rosenstock's band.
Yeah, no, and look, that's okay. Because as the documentary goes on, you see them growing up a little bit.
Well, I
didn't credit the documentary with that kind of perspective.
It's because
for quite a while, and I was just getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And then when you realize you're watching the documentary and you see them going, oh, I think we better have to, really, maybe we should be maybe asking for money for some of this shit. And
I'll play
like,
a quick clip about the sort of a clip from the documentary, because I don't think, does anyone in Ireland even know who this guy is?
Probably, I have no idea who he was.
But this is a clip about them talking about how they would only play all ages shows, which I think is a fucking seriously noble thing. But
I'll come back to it.
Okay.
Matt Kurz had a one-man band.
And I played opening up for him, and he just like loved it. And I was waiting for a job to start, and he convinced me to hop in the van with him and go on tour opening up for him and Rick Johnson.
We talked to seemed to be so receptive to the things that were going on.
We didn't sell any shirts. We didn't ever have any CDs. I believe the way he put it was having fans and friends and not having like human dollar signs to have to worry about.
It felt like something was actually working with what I was doing, which I had never really felt like that with anything that I'd done with music before. For whatever reason, this tour was working out. We weren't losing money. We were all going to come back with a little bit of money for rent.
It's been the best tour of my life. Thanks, everybody.
At a certain point, we decided we're only going to do shows that are $10 or less, or shows that are all ages.
I guess it's sort of weird to be like, we're including everyone, but if you're under 21, you can't go.
I don't know when music means more to you than when you're a fucking teenager. And for me, it was the only thing I had to comfort me and the only thing I had to look forward to.
Like, you don't have somewhere to belong. And then you go to their shows and you hear the words that Jeff is telling you and you have someone to connect with, and it just makes everything so much easier.
That's how, like, you find, like, people that you love. It's like, you bond over this, like, music, so you, like, bond over the same message together.
So that's a clip from the movie Never Get Tired.
Yes, it is.
The all ages thing. Now, I saw Jeff Rosenstock playing in Ithaca when I was living in Ithaca. It was the week Trump got elected.
Mm-hmm.
And Ithaca is a super fucking liberal town.
Yeah.
And it was like, you would swear they just elected, like, Satan. Like, you know, like, it was... Like, you know, obviously...
Satan's been on the top rung of that ladder for 6 billion years, Danny. At least you would be guaranteed some basic competence if he was running things.
These people thought that Barack Obama wasn't liberal enough. This was the kind of town this was like.
I think Barack Obama was
a lot, but I mean, compared to the fucking.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. I look,
things being relative, like, you know.
I like Barack Obama, but there's some shit he did. The fucking drones. Fucking
also, what he did, wasn't Edward there Snowden? Like, wasn't he outrageous. The president that there was the most? People kicked out of the country under, yeah. Apparently.
There was a lot of stuff Obama did that I really didn't like.
But I went to see... I
still quite like him, my man, to be honest with you.
I saw in the paper Jeff Rosenstock was on, and I was like, oh, fuck. And it... All ages show, I was like... Mm-hmm. I went to the gig, I was
the
like...
The oldest guy there?
Oh, yeah, it was one other dude who looked maybe a couple of years older than me. So, it was really... Like, I went to see... It was the... Ithaca was plunged into this fucking state of depression after the election, you know, and I went to this gig. Kat was
really
going to
saw both sides of the fucking
spectrum.
It
was crazy. It was a pretty mad experience. Like,
is there a middle? There must be places in America that don't reside firmly on one end of the spectrum or the other, that are somewhere in the middle. Like.
It's there might be. Like, I don't think I was there. Like, you know.
But I never heard of them.
Yeah. Like, Ithaca kind of, in some ways, kind of reminded me of Galway. It even looked a bit like Galway, like, you know. And, but I went to see this gig. I was there on my own. Kat didn't want to go. So I was at the gig on my own, and it was all ages, so it was a lot of teenagers at it. Yeah. Very self-conscious. I decided if I stood kind of, not at the back of the room, but at the back of the crowd, and I had my jacket over my shoulder, I just looked like a concerned parent. So I thought I kind of got away with it. Because I went to buy a beer. You had to get a stamp on your hand if you wanted to buy a beer.
Fucking... All right, okay, go on.
You had to buy a beer. And I went to the thing to pay for the beer. And the girl serving the beer was about my age. And she was like... I can't remember what she said. She said something like, oh, you're old enough to drink. That's pretty unusual in here or whatever. And I was like, look, I want to go to gigs. I know I'm fucking... 20 years older than some of the people in there, but am I just going to never allow to go to a gig ever again and just stay in my house? Only go to the gigs I can convince my wife to go to, which is just Jack White. Like, you know.
You're declined into the veil of years, as the bard put it.
I'm not willing to let my life fucking play out like that, like, you know.
It's weird to hang around teenagers, though, isn't
it? Oh, it was really weird.
But did you not find it a bit... I met Kieran McNulty and Dylan in Brubaker's one night over Christmas. And the way things were, I was sort of heading out, which is how I interpreted this fucking text. And I showed up and they were gone. A pair of them were gone within an hour. So I was there.
Why
on
was
my
he
going
to Brewmakers just for a quick drink?
I think there was some kind of football on that they were getting, that they were watching, and I didn't arrive until just after the football. But at the same time, as I was there, it started filling up with young ones. And one hates to sound fucking... One hates to sound too Harvey Weinstein. But I was like, Jesus Christ. It's pretty fucking cool.
You thought that?
I felt like
Maybe this just means I've gone so far I can never, never go back to normality. Like, I can never really give a shit how I look anymore to other people. But I remember at the time thinking, Jesus Christ, if I was fucking... Oh my God, I just... The words almost came out of my mouth.
Yeah, no, don't. I don't think anyone...
If I was about to say if I was 20 years younger. Isn't it awful that I can say that and have it be accurate?
Well, yeah, but it's true. Like, if you were 20 years younger, what would you be, 16?
17.
17. Yeah, that's probably what you were fucking dealing with in there. Like, and that's the kids that were at this gig. Now, the thing I will say, like, I wasn't necessarily thinking like that because I was too uncomfortable to think like that.
Well, I was there with two other people and I had had a couple of whiskeys at that stage.
Okay.
But also, I bet you the people who would go to see Jeff Rosenstock concert are not the same kind of teenagers that would be in Brew Bakers with their tits and cleavage, tits and arse.
I will say, I was watching the gig, and it, like I say, context, the week Trump was elected,
mm-hmm.
and Ithaca, fucking black cloud hanging over it, literally, like, it was like the world was ending in that town. Like,
but, there's time yet, then.
Yeah, but he just came on, and he was like, the support bands were kind of the same, but it was like all that footage in the documentary of people going fucking bonkers at those gigs and it being, you know, to the point where you can't even tell what song is on, like, or what he's saying. That's what that gig was like. In the space of one song, half the audience were on the stage. It was crazy, like, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just in a place sort of like the OH, like, it was a place that size, like, you know. But he was he was talking to the audience and he was like, oh, things are gonna fucking get weird, and I know I'm sure back home things are difficult at home and your parents are worried and we all have to look after each other and all this kind of stuff, not unlike some of the stuff that Dave Chappelle was saying. And I just remember thinking, what a fucking, he's the right person to be playing here tonight, like, you know.
Okay.
He was like, he couldn't have handled it better, like, and I think they were on tour and he probably, you know, maybe he had his spiel worked out by the time he got to Ithaca. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like, this was maybe 5 days after the election, like, you know, but I remember thinking, for these people in here tonight. Raw. Sorry?
5 days is not a long time. It's not a long time, no.
But I just remember thinking, like, fair fucks to him, like, you know, this is what, you know, who knows how political these young kids are if they even fucking knew there was an election or whatever, but. Like, I just thought he was just like that's a positive role model to have at this point. Like, you know,
I might have sounded very fucking angry and irritated earlier on. By the end of the documentary, I was not. But that's because the documentary takes you to, the documentary follows him to a place where he was like, oh, I have to stop posing and start actually being a viable human being in the world. And as long as he has kind of successfully made that revelation, I have no fucking problem with it.
There was a guy who was playing bass in his band at one point who I'm pretty sure was my dental hygienist's husband.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Because I went to the dentist when I was in Michigan. And there was the dental hygienist's black lady and she was really cool. And when I told her that I was thinking of moving back to Ireland or moving away from Michigan from Grand Rapids because I'd had a bad experience with conservatism and all the rest of it. She was like, she spent the whole time I was in the chair, I was having a wisdom tooth taken out, but she spent the whole time that she was prepping me. Very painful.
I'll go back to it. Go on, cool. Tell me the rest of it.
She spent the whole time that she was prepping me in the chair for the tooth being taken out, telling me all the great stuff about Grand Rapids. And she was like talking about her husband, who is in a band called Mustard Plug. And I just was watching the documentary, and that
sounds awful.
Yeah, I was saying to her, I was like, is that a euphemism? And she was like, no, it's the thing to stop the mustard coming out of the bottle or whatever. I was like, oh, okay. But really? Apparently her husband is mates with Maynard James Keenan and Tool. You know the band Tool?
No.
I'm not a fan, but they're huge in the States, and like, okay, they've been out staying in his vineyard and all this kind of stuff. But while I was watching the documentary, they interviewed the guy who was the bass player in the band, and I just saw bass player with Jeff Rosen, the bomb in the music industry, and I saw Mustard Plug on the thing underneath, and I was like, holy fuck, is that fucking what's-her-face's husband?
Okay, fair play. You're dental hygienist. I had a wisdom tooth out. That's why I asked you that.
Oh, it's really painful.
I didn't
have the I didn't get knocked out. I was awake for it, like, you know.
Yeah, no, neither did I. Yeah.
It just seemed a bit excessive to get knocked out. Like, they can numb your gums. That doesn't mean to say. It felt like he was going at it with a shovel. Like, you know, it was.
Yeah, but it was weird. It wasn't painful, was it?
Mine was painful. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
It was going sideways or something. Like, you know.
Oh, maybe that was it. Mine came out in pieces.
I still have a baby tooth. That's how I've been to the dentist. Like, that's the only time I've been to the dentist since I was maybe 13, like, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And there was, like, the guy was like, okay, there's some shit that needs doing in here. But medical insurance, it didn't cost me very much. And
good stuff.
So I, that was the best advice. I went to, me and Kat went to because she had the car, we had to do everything together, like, you know. Yeah, so we went to the dentist on the same day for the first checkup, like, you know. Yeah. And we were both getting our checkup done. We were separated by a curtain. So there's a Japanese guy who was the main dentist there, and he came in. He's like, need teeth for three things. You need to, what was it he said? Speak, eat, look good. And he was like, you speak fine. You chew your food, I'm sure, fine. And you look good enough to get beautiful wife. So I was like, fair play, man. Yeah, and he was.
Yeah, okay, I like this guy already. I'm like, you are all right.
But I just know, that night I saw Jeff in Ithaca, I just thought, that is cool that these kids have, if they'd gone to see fucking, if they'd gone to see the Kings of Leon or someone, it might even get brought up. They'd be stood at the back of some fucking stadium somewhere, it mightn't even get brought up, and if it did, it would be in some kind of fucking meaningless kind of way. But this guy did a real connection with him. He hung out after the gig, spoke to fucking everybody.
Aren't the Kings, like, of Leon entitled to their opinions?
Yeah, but it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't mean anything coming from those guys. Like, you know.
Why?
I just picked them as an example.
This
guy came to their fucking hometown, played in a small venue, put on an all ages show.
Okay, right.
Where he's
sacrificing arenas, and he's not.
Sacrificing arenas, but
those are the venues he can fill.
He's playing all ages gigs, which automatically means you're not going to make as much money,
Danny. Which is bad
because you can't charge people into a club. It wasn't in a nightclub. It was in a fucking hall.
This is the fucking silliness, the stupidity of the way he was going on. I'm saying this like I hold it against the man, and I really don't. It's just that there was an hour and a half documentary, and about three quarters of an hour of it, I feel like I was ready to swing for the cunt. But because, which is better, taking the corporate gigs and doing the corporate gigs, and then when you don't have a corporate gig, doing all ages gigs. And having this viable long-term plan to keep all ages gigs available and open. Or saying, we will do nothing unless it's all ages. And your band collapsing.
But he doesn't have an audience outside of that, which is another factor. That's who his audience are. Because he writes these really emo, hard-on-sleeve punk songs.
That's another thing. I can't tell you whether I like his music or not.
I like some of it. I'm not going to sit here and say I like it as much as I like Kurt Vile or something.
But I have no context for it because it didn't.
Nothing's going to jump out on that documentary.
For a music documentary, the music was weirdly sidelined the whole time.
Yeah.
Do you remember Muscle Shoals? Do you remember that documentary?
That guy died not that long ago.
Ah, did he?
Yeah, he's 83 or something, I think.
Oh, he's pretty good at instant. It doesn't mean it's not a tragedy.
Yeah, he died before Christmas, I think.
Anyway, that documentary was something else because you got the music in that documentary.
You did, but now in that documentary, you were dealing with fucking, like, that music that's legendary. That's Dead Sea Scrolls, you know.
Okay, well, okay, bad example then. Dig.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about the fucking, what was the name of them?
The Brian Jonestown Massacre.
The Brian Jonestown Massacre.
There was...
I came away from that thinking, these guys are pretty fucking good.
There was an element to the the Bond Music Industry documentary that was kind of talking about how amazing a songwriter this guy was and not really hearing any of the songs.
Yeah.
Is in that documentary, and like it was only when I watched it again today, I was like, oh, that song is in the documentary. I didn't hear it the first time, you know.
And I'll tell you something else. I didn't come away from that documentary trusting the opinions of anyone who spoke about it.
Okay, that's interesting.
Well, it's silly, Dan. Their opinions were silly for a large portion of it.
I don't know if I agree with you though.
What else?
He was trying it. He was trying it to see that it would it work for him. It didn't work.
What was he
trying? Yeah, the ultimate fucking.
What was he trying? Like,
he was trying to do
like,
things on his own terms.
Oh, we call us up, we're going, and you didn't know who was going to be there until you went on the tour and you saw who was in the van. So, that's the essence
that's
of his...
That's not that unusual.
That's the essence. That's exactly my point.
That's not that unusual in that world.
But that's exactly my point. It was like, they're talking about it like it's the essence of his fucking genius. And I'm like, it's the essence. His greatest accomplishment is that when he needs a musician, he goes and finds a musician. That might have been genius 7,000 years ago when the first person who came up with the idea of musicians was like, maybe I think I'll go get me somebody who can make some music. That was genius. 7,000 years later, when we've had 7,000 years of human history of people doing that, that's not genius anymore. That's just a man putting a band together.
What a weird wee point to pick up on.
Oh, Dan... Why was it in the documentary? If it's a weird point, why were they talking about it like it's amazing? Like,
but I mean, I don't think they were.
I felt very strongly that they were.
Okay, I don't know if I
disliked it intensely, the bullshit. Like, I really disliked it intensely. I was like, so we spray paint t-shirts? Because
I just,
like, it's like being in a mall. You know what a mall is good for? Buying things you want. I want a fuck. I like your music. I want a t-shirt.
Why do you think you're in a mall, sir?
Fuck you! You don't deserve health insurance. I have money I want to fucking give you. See, this is the thing. I'm getting very fixated on the first half of the documentary. The second half of the documentary is them making the realization.
And he was also fucking in his early 20s.
Exactly. I understand.
And the thing
that.
Is, like, the thing that
I
liked about it is that at the end, that... I was watching the bit at the end where they play their last gig kind of affected me a bit because you realise that they were kind of saying goodbye to their fucking... I don't want to call it youth because it's not like he's fucking 60 or anything, but they were saying goodbye to that part of their lives where they were carefree. And,
you were,
you know,
here last night at the poker and heard the discussions. There was a chunk... You have to say goodbye to something for your 30s to start. Like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not... I accept that. And
but what
that,
I liked
the second
about
half
it was,
of the documentary did have
it
that
wasn't
context.
Your usual macho rock and roll shite. There were people that were no, I don't agree with you at all. There were people that were genuinely fucking upset that part of their lives was coming to an end and they weren't afraid to show it. And there was that bit where they interviewed
your man
who smashed up his arm with the wine bottle. They're interviewing him and he's going, yeah, I mean the worst part of it, like, I just don't know how long I can keep doing this. And then you can see he can't say anymore because he's like, he starts getting like, he's going to start crying. And it's like, yeah, you can't keep doing this because this isn't a way of life. Like,
no,
you
exactly.
Know? This isn't like,
it's not viable.
The mad thing is he is still doing it, but I assume the business model must be different at this point. Like,
oh, well, you went to a show. I mean, is it?
I don't think I paid any more than a tenner into it. Like, you know, but it was fucking...
See, that's
but like
not a bad idea if you can keep them coming in, like, but...
I'll tell you, man, those kids, that they were obsessed. It was like the fucking Beatles were on. It was unbelievable, like, you know.
That's fair enough. We all do, you know, we all have our things. But I have no problem with him saying, I'm going to keep doing these $10 shows, I'm going to keep doing these all-ages shows. But the idea that I'm going to refuse work if it doesn't have these things... You deserve to be poor, like.
It is... Alright, I can kind of see your point in that
I'm
sense.
I'm not going to sell t-shirts to people who want t-shirts because that would be selling out. You deserve not to have health insurance. That sounds harsh.
Do you know what? It is harsh, right? It is harsh, but it's also true. You made a conscious decision. Now, you made a stupid decision. And I think by the end of it, they are actually coming and think, oh shit, we made some stupid fucking decisions.
Well, he says it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've actually got a clip of him saying that very thing, if you don't mind me playing it. Just for,
no, not at
again,
all.
I don't think many people know who he is, so I just want to give it the context.
This is the first record where I'm kind of aware of the fact that I'm not going to be dead when I'm 30. So I'm just like, well, shit, I got to like make this like, that's super, super, super good. It's possible, and hopefully, like, people can hear it because I don't I don't have like a fucking backup plan or anything anymore. It's weird.
People that don't get us or know us, like, well, you guys are popular enough. Like, you guys should just, like, you know, be on a record label and, like, you know, you should, like, push your band really hard and you guys tour all the time and nothing's staying. Like, yeah, you know, you don't know Jeff. Like, Jeff won't do that.
Admittedly, I probably fucked up, like, a lot of stuff for buying the music industry because bands would offer us tours and I'd say, okay, is it all ages? No? Okay. We won't play the not all ages shows. And they're like, okay, you just won't play any of the shows because we're doing you a favor and offering you this tour. And I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. Bye.
You can't get mad at them for doing that because if Jeff did, he wouldn't be Jeff and then he wouldn't write these songs and then we wouldn't be this band. You know, the reason we succeed is because we are us, that it helps and hinders us.
So I won't wake you when you're sleeping. I won't go to when I'm freaking out. Those weren't terrible. Yeah.
I kind of like that little clip of him trying to get the singing together in his, because that's what, that's like the idea of when you're growing up and you see the documentaries about people making the albums and you see the Beatles in Abbey Road and all that and they're all sitting around with sitars figuring stuff out. It's not really like that. It's you doing your vocals in your bedroom, like, you know, really self-conscious that the neighbors can hear you and all that stuff. Like, you know, I can kind of, like, that's how these things are kind of made these days. Like, you know, and I really identify with him in that moment because I've done that and, like, not realized how loud. I remember trying to record something one night in Galway and doing what he was doing there with the headphones and singing. I don't think I realized how loud it had gotten because someone started banging a shoe in the room above
me.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Look, it can happen. I find it, you're probably right, your man, his mate, his bandmate, probably was a little bit more savvy. But I...
But like all those guys, like one of the guys has an IT job, see, and like is it the drummer? And like one of the other lads just eventually just moved to Australia. He was like, oh no, fuck this. Like,
yeah, but Danny, they were talking about this like it made them fucking heroes, like. It's like, okay, you have a job in order to make money. So the fuck what? Like, why is this making you worthy of a documentary?
Well, no, but
when you need a musician, you find a musician. Why is there a documentary about you? Like,
because he has made a name for himself. He's very important to a lot of people and still fucking is. Like, you know,
I find it. I remember, I can't remember where I read it, but I remember reading the story. You know Che Guevara?
Yeah.
And then you know the fucking Jim Fitzpatrick Che Guevara painting that goes around. Does he make money out of that, Jim Fitzpatrick?
No, he specifically didn't copyright it.
More fool him.
It was crazy. Like,
I remember one time...
It's been on fucking Rage Against the Machine albums. He would have made a fortune.
This was pre-fucking internet, right? So... I don't know where I came across it, but I remember reading a thing about Che Guevara, and the thing that struck me was he shot ordinary people, like smallholding farmers. He shot them, and by committing this murder, somehow the land was the people's now, and I remember thinking, that's not right. And I think at a young age, when people would flirt with communism, I kind of got turned around. And
I had think friends that were really into it.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. I think I couldn't... That one thing, that's always my go-to image for communism, is Che Guevara shooting an old man and taking his land. And I remember thinking, oh, that's not right.
No, I didn't realize that was a thing. I don't know super a lot about
it's communism. Like, it's one of those things that, like, you know, when you, as you know, yeah. But I think there's this sort of very youthful, silly idea that commerce is somehow intrinsically wrong. And you have to fucking grow out of that to just exist in the real world.
Do you mind if I play? I just have one last clip of them actually talking about the free music side of things.
I just kind of thought, hey, so putting out free music worked for me. Maybe this would work for Matt. And that's how quote unquote started.
quote-unquote records is strictly an online, digital, donation-based record label.
The idea being you record a record, you put it up online for free, and if you like it, you just sort of pay whatever you want to. So there's not sort of this like initial investment in trying out something new, which is really kind of like passé now, like everybody does that.
The British rock band Radiohead made its new album, In Rainbows, available for download on its website. That is the only place to get it, and buyers can pay whatever they think the album is worth.
Jeff likes the joke that, quote-unquote, is like Radiohead and Trent Reznor minus success. But I mean, Jeff was doing, quote-unquote, a year or two before that was like a thing. You know, it's not like when I was a teenager or something, you'd have to go to Tower Records and spend $20 to get a band's album. You can't do that because Tower Records doesn't exist because the industry has changed so much.
I don't even know if you have the thing on iTunes. I don't know where that money goes. But you know where the money's going when it's quote-unquote. You know that it's going to the artist. Jeff just gives it directly to the artist. He's not even, like, splitting it. Labels split.
Jeff just sort of, like, takes you, puts it out online, and it's there for everybody. And if it's going to catch on, it will.
2 weeks after it had been out, our first show ever in Artigo Vespucci, the show, there were so many people there, and everybody knew the words. It was our first show ever. And it's all because it was all for free, and it was all the lyrics were right there for everybody.
We were like, wow, we've never been to Texas before, and like six kids knew all of the songs off of Set Ourselves Free. You could definitely tell. I think one of them had a Bomb the Music Industry shirt on.
So that was a clip of them talking about how they set up this donation-based online record label where you could pay $200 for the fucking thing if you wanted to, you know, that, or you could just get it for nothing. What is your... You seemed like you wanted to make a point. You've got 10 minutes.
Everybody went fucking on about that. Like, it was like Radiohead with these Johnny Come Lately stealing the thunder, like...
Well, I don't think Radiohead knew of these guys' existence. I don't think...
Also, I don't think the point
also, the day that fucking Radiohead thing came out, we had band practice and we downloaded it for nothing. Like, we didn't pay for it, like...
When that... I remember that being the story. I remember Radiohead doing that being a big fucking story. It made it just the normal news. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And at the time, I wasn't like, what? How would this technology possibly work? The point is not Radiohead came up with this spectacular idea. The point is this established thing was being done by a band of the prominence of Radiohead.
Yeah.
But they were talking like, oh, he'd been doing it for years before that. And it's like, yeah, no fucking shit. So had millions of other fucking other people. The reason Radiohead made the headlines is not because they came up with the idea. The reason the Radiohead made the headlines is that a band of the prominence of Radiohead was now doing the same thing as all these small-time artists. So I don't... There is one girl, you were saying, was that the one who at the end was nearly in tears?
Well, she's actually in tears. There's one bit where a tear goes into her mouth while she's talking.
Yeah,
she Laura is in Stevenson. Tears. Her stuff's really good.
Is it?
Yeah, I like it.
Because
yeah.
She seems not to have recognized that this is childish.
Well,
and I would have very serious, if somebody can't recognize the childishness of their position, what possible insight
I think it's more admiration because she has put things out on that record label, but she's also put things out with big established record labels.
Good.
You know?
Good.
She doesn't really she doesn't conduct her career in the same way that he does.
Good. Do you know what I would say to anybody, watch this documentary. Because by the end, you do see a man. What you see from the beginning to the end is a man growing the fuck up.
Yeah.
But that does mean you have to sit through a lot of his bullshit teenage angst, which he was having in his 20s, which is the most annoying kind of teenage angst.
Everybody does, though. Yeah, you're in your 20s. You're still a teenager you're about 26.
You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right.
It's just like I was saying.
I find it aggravating by times.
Oh, yeah, no, I can imagine. But I wouldn't want to listen to 20-year-old me go on about this stuff. And I didn't have half the fucking talent this lad has for writing, like, you know.
But that's another severe problem with this, because I don't know what kind of fucking talent he has. The music was not a big presence in that documentary, and it is a music documentary.
Every song he writes is like he's got a belly full of like feelings, and then he just goes, you know, and that's what the songs are like, you know.
That's all right. Listen to me. I remember the name Anton Newcombe. I remember the name Anton Newcombe because I watched a documentary that featured his music. And even though I think that man is a fucking walking mentalist, I also think he's an amazing songwriter. And I really like his stuff. And I've gone and looked it up on Spotify since watching that documentary. I have not looked up that guy.
Nor will I.
I can't imagine I'll get to the point where I will. Because there wasn't like, even if and dig, if I actually went back and counted it, maybe there was only two or three Brian Jonestown Massacre songs on there.
Oh no, there was more than that.
There probably was.
It's got one of my all time favourite clips of anybody making music in Dig, where Anton Newcombe is kind of on his own. It just kind of shows that it's New Year's Eve, I think, or something like that, and everybody's at this party, yeah, and he's in the room on his own, and you see him kind of strumming guitars and hitting like xylophones and stuff and bashing around on things. You think, God, that can't sound too good.
But he's
and
doing then it himself.
He's doing it all himself, and it blends the sound all together to the finished track. And that's like, I remember when I first saw that, I think I actually had to put the DVD off and go and record something after watching it, like, you know, because it was just like, that's why you do it. Like, look at that. Like, you know, I'm not saying he's not fucking making Stairway to Heaven or anything, like, you know, but it's like,
but he made excellent songs.
Yeah, yeah. But
but I don't know whether Jeff Rosenstock's songs are excellent or not.
I like some. I think I'm too old to get into it now, like, you know. But a music show I listen to, based in Chicago, like Sound Opinions. It's Kermit O'Mayo for music, essentially, like, and it's American, but
okay.
They give his, he put which out an is, album like last
which
week.
Which is Off the Ball for Movies, which is Top Gear for Sport.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
It's not a unique formula to them. But
no, it's just anything that's where I don't really have an interest in the subject they're talking about, but I still find it enjoyable to hear them talk about it. I always think of it as like Top Gear.
I know what you mean.
I just like those guys. I don't care about sport. I just like the off the ball guys.
He put an album out last week or the week before. It's supposed to be brilliant, like, you know.
Hmm.
But and it, again, it's fucking, I think it's up there for free if someone wants to get it, like, you know. But to see in an age now where vinyl has come back in, I noticed at his gig there was a lot of people buying vinyl. Now Ithaca is kind of a wealthy enough town, so maybe that's not, maybe that's not common.
Vinyl of his work.
Yeah, like they were selling records at the gigs, like, you know.
That makes me, okay, right, that makes me feel good, because he's grown up a little bit.
I nearly bought it myself, and then I was like, it's another thing I have to drag back to Ireland with me, I might leave it where it is.
The honest to God truth is, there's this weird contradiction here, because I don't give a fuck about merchandise. I love comics, but look around you, is there a fucking action figure here, or a statue, or anything?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't give a fuck about that shit.
No, I would be with you there, yeah.
I don't care about merchandise, but somebody saying, under no circumstances am I selling merchandise, is silly. I can't believe I've been so negative, and I'm so sorry I've been so negative, because I would actually recommend anybody watch this documentary, because you literally see a guy growing up before your eyes.
I've never related to a scene in a music documentary as much as that last gig that they did, and the lads are all just like, well, that's that, you know, like, Jeff can go off and do this now, whatever his next trip is his next trip, but I've got work in the morning, like, you know.
Yeah,
it's just like I fucking related to it hardcore, you know.
And maybe that's a wonderful way to do it, and maybe that's the way the music industry is heading, like, but it's interesting to see a man grow up before your eyes. If his main audience is still teenagers,
like that bit in Dig, where the, you know, the bit where the tambourine guy realizes that the band is broken up, and he's like, "Well, maybe I could get in some other band or whatever." Doing what, like?
Yeah. Better not lose my tambourine on the way home. But knowing me, that's quite likely. Frankly,
what was his name again?
I can't remember his name.
No, I can't remember it either.
Nobody needs to remember that man's name.
No.
Listen. It's a wonderful documentary because I misjudged it. I spent half of it super angry because I thought they were lionizing childishness.
I think in the end they weren't. But
no, I agree with you. And it is wonderful to see that shift where you're like, oh, that's why people need money. And you're like,
but when you're in your 20s, like, as long as you can afford a pint and a fucking burger, you're grand. Like,
but I didn't think it was that kind of documentary until
the end,
probably into the last quarter, and then I was like, oh, I read this all wrong, I shouldn't be this angry. But there you go.
Picture you fuming. Did you watch it today?
Yeah.
Like, picture you fuming the whole way through it. So, Niall, that about wraps us up for this week. What are you thinking for next week?
Next week, I want you to watch... This is ridiculous, but it's up on YouTube. You're not going to thank me for this.
Is this the original one, or this is your reconsideration? Or
this is my reconsideration. No, this is my reconsideration. Because I said... I can't remember what I said now, but I said something that reminded me of this. You're not going to thank me for this.
Oh,
but
fuck.
I know, I'm so super, super sorry. I want you to watch a lecture that's up on YouTube.
Like a lecture?
A college lecture.
About what?
It's... I hope I get the number right for our listeners more than for you, because I can correct it for you. I can correct it for our listeners on our Facebook page. I want you to watch, I think it's Lecture 11 in the Maps of Meaning series, which is about the story of creation in Genesis and the story of the awakening, the enlightenment of the Buddha. A comparative analysis.
Okay, fair enough. For next week, that's, I want you to 11, watch...
I think, but I'll correct it if not.
I want you to watch the first 45 minutes of Never Get Tired, just sort of 6 times or so.
I'm so sorry. Do you know what? The advantage of what I'm saying is that it is technically a YouTube video, but you don't need the image. It's just a man standing at a lectern, so you can listen to it as if it were a podcast.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Is it a podcast anywhere that I...
Possibly. He does have podcasts.
Okay. That would be handier.
Yeah.
Okay. This episode next week is going to be of no interest to anybody. But I want you to watch...
I love it.
Another comedy special. It's Laurie Kilmartin. She's a writer on the Conan O'Brien show. She is great.
I actually know her.
Do you? Yeah.
She's from Joe Rogan. Yeah.
She's got a great podcast called The Jackie and Laurie Show with Jackie Cation. But she has a special called 45 Jokes About My Dead Dad. So she's from creation to dead dad. In
fucking
one
oh
move.
My god! All so human life is so there. Busy.
So next week, all human life.
What does Kermode say about 2001? Goes from the dawn of human civilization to the creation of a new species, and it does it all in 85 minutes.
It's a good point.
Yeah. Well, listen here, come over at the 2-hour mark.
So, all right. So, Laurie Kilmartin, 45 Jokes About My Dead Dad, and what is it again?
Lecture 11 of the Jordan Peterson's Maps of Meaning series.
Will we have anybody listening next week, do you think?
Anybody listening next
for
week?
Ourselves at this point.
Anybody listening next week is hardcore, and I fucking salute you.
Yeah, tip of the hat. So, thanks very much for downloading our podcast. Share it with like-minded folk. But this chair has been creaking the whole way through this thing.
Yeah, I
don't know why I didn't govern my behavior to accommodate it. But
there's no point in starting worrying about it now, Dad.
No, literally after the fucking thing should be over. But thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you fucking next week. We're going to play out with a tune called Future 86 from the Bomb the Music Industry.
Nice.
So thanks very much for listening. I've been Danny O'Hanlon.
I've been Niall McCann.
Cheers. Have a good one. Bye. Save a word in output.